from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Okay, good morning, kids. How's everybody doing? This is OneRadioNetwork.com. And it would be the 29th of November. Let's see, what is that? 30 days, that's September, June, and November, rest of 31. So I guess last day of the month would be tomorrow, something like that. Okay, here's our phone number if you'd like to join the show, 888-663-6386. Email patrick at oneradionetwork.com. And we are live here this morning with Andrew Goss. It's a Wednesday, so that would be our money day. The Real World of Money is the name of the show. Andrew Goss is a longtime friend, currency historian. He buys and sells gold coins for a living. His company is SDL out of Hawthorne, New Jersey, and also Hilton Head, where he's there for the winter. Like the birds, he goes south and doesn't play golf, but he'll probably learn golf before the end of the year. And so we talk about money. He's a currency historian and really studies this stuff, working on his two books, Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cook's The Books. And, well, you took a day off of golf to be on the show here, Mr. Goss. That was good of you.
Yeah, I've been coming down here 23 years. I haven't learned to play golf yet.
You haven't. They haven't got to.
Doesn't mean I haven't tried.
Do people drive around with their golf carts like they do in some of these?
Yes.
They drive to the golf cart to the course, right?
Well, they drive the golf cart everywhere. Drive it to the restaurant, you know, to the beach. So it's a neat little golf cart type community.
Yeah. So I guess you don't have to rent the golf carts from there. You buy your own, right?
Buy your own.
Of course,
exactly.
Some of these golf courses, they probably charge you to, you know, like the corkage fee, right? If you bring your own wine, they charge you for the wine. Oh, you're using your own cart?
No, they charge you plenty already, so I think they're going to be fine.
It's an expensive game, isn't it?
It is an expensive hobby. Indeed,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Well, so is collecting gold and silver and coins, I guess.
Well, it is, but here you get to spend money and save it at the same time. You know, when you spend it on golf, it's gone.
Yeah, especially when you start, like I used to do, is lose a lot of golf balls in the lake. I mean, it could get expensive.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you become frustrated with your game. You have to buy the best gear, and you figure that's going to make... Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
Not me. No thanks.
Okay. So what do you think... You were talking about a disorganized fall and some really dumb things possibly to happen. I mean, so what's up? What's going on? Why haven't we seen any kind of really dumb things happen? I mean, what's holding this thing called the economy together?
The Dutch boy with his finger in the dike is what's holding it together. So certainly the folks that are concerned about this sort of thing are taking action on every front in an attempt to hold it back. I don't know if you caught Jerome Powell's comments yesterday.
A little bit.
But, he, you know, the new incoming Fed chair has signaled his willingness to accommodate, which is very important for the markets. They need to know that the Federal Reserve is going to be with them and not against them.
Accommodate. That would be a code for printing money, right?
Yes,
that's their code. That's I like that one. It's accommodate. We're going to be accommodative.
Yes, we're going to be accommodative. And, you know, if you of course, listen to all the pundits, and there are many, both inside and outside the Fed, the Fed presidents themselves are making comments, as well as members of the Federal Reserve Board. So it's a big organization, and everybody's doing as much as they can.
Now, this fellow Powell, he used to be one of the top dudes, right? And he just got moved up.
Yep.
One of the presidents. Was he president of...
He was one of the members of the Federal Reserve Board.
So he did say something that maybe you're going to do, keep working on to raise interest rates a bit.
Yeah.
And then also, and just to anger Elizabeth Warren, he said, I think we're going to just kind of really look at some of these regulations and see if we can't, you know, make it things a little. So she wasn't happy about that. Of course, she's not happy about anything. Anyone has to
no,
do with the Trump administration.
That's right. Yeah, Pocahontas, I think he called her.
I can't believe it.
She claims to be an Indian. Okay, that's all right.
He calls her Pocahontas. You know, even if you don't like President Trump, you got to love this guy. I mean, he's just really hilarious, you know.
He doesn't take himself too seriously.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
So the thing, of course, that that is sort of holding up the entire matrix is the bond market. And the activity in the bond market is what will determine which way the economy is going to go.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. What do you mean by that? I mean, people that study this stuff that are into bonds, they've got to know what you're saying, right?
Yes, they do.
Okay,
yeah.
So what does everybody know that you and I don't know, or my listeners don't know?
Well, that, you know, the signals that Jerome Powell gave were that, you know, things are, they're going to continue along the same path, which means easy money, as we said, accommodative.
Easy
and
money.
And the idea that, yes, that the Fed is going to provide some sort of lifeline. We talked about last week, for example, the municipalities themselves issuing revenue-specific bonds, which sort of unseat the other bonds, the general obligation bonds, which is historically what cities and other issuing authorities have put out, just a single bond that's based on our general revenue and no specific claim on any one portion of the revenue. And now the desperate cities are isolating things like their sales tax revenue or their water board rents.
Oh, so they borrow money against that?
That specific thing, huh. Right? That becomes their collateral.
Oh, so that's their collateral. So in other words, in just doing a school bond or, fire truck bond or whatever they do.
Right.
They
call those general obligation.
General obligation bonds, right?
That's
which
right,
makes our top property taxes go up, right?
Well, property tax is one part of the mix. So are the sales taxes and user fees and any other revenues that happen to come the way of the municipality.
Don't you love those user fees?
They don't call them taxes. That's
No, user fees.
It's a user fee. You know, building permits in towns and things. So all the revenue that comes in is thrown into one pool, and against it are issued general obligation bonds.
General obligation bonds. I told you, I mentioned that Austin just did $1 billion school, and the people said, yeah, we'll do that. What do they do with $1 billion? Well, let's not go there. So let's go back to this accommodative idea, which is for those people in Dripping Springs, it just means the Fed will create money, monetize debt instruments, the money supply expands, and the value of our purchasing power goes down. And you said over the years, and this is so interesting if you really think about it, this is a hidden tax. I mean, this is a tax on everybody that uses dollars.
That's right.
Right. I mean, it's just a tax.
That's all.
That's okay. That
Let me phone. Disable this.
You want to disable that?
Yeah.
Okay. Done. Plug that. Sorry. Okay. If you'd like to be on the show, sorry about we got a little delay here on the stream. They were working on it, but it's good. It is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. The Masseys, Richard Massey and Meridian Grace will be here tomorrow, and we'll have a good time, and then open phone Friday. So come on in and join the show, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So how you doing?
Shouldn't be a bother anymore.
Shouldn't be a bother anymore. Did you just unplug the world? Okay,
that's right.
So this hidden tax has been going on since 1913, right? Since they did this Federal Reserve thing. And it's a tax where you know, the cars go up in price, and the houses go up in prices, and
money is taxed at a higher rate.
The theory being that you would be getting paid more along the way, right?
Right.
And then, so it all works itself out, right? Even though a car is now $50,000, when 50 years ago it was
$5,000. $500, man. Whatever those were kind of car
so,
you were buying.
So did that, I mean, is that whole Keynesian model thing kind of, it doesn't, it's not even. We still get screwed, the people that use dollars, right? And we still get the short end of the stick, right? Or not?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah. More importantly, people who save dollars, you know, that's storing, I guess, if you look at what people, the behavior that people are engaging in, the ones that are really worried are pulling out of the dollar as a store of value. For example, that Leonardo painting, did you see that?
Yeah, 450 million.
Bad enough.
Yeah.
So $500 million in a painting, and they feel more comfortable storing their wealth in that than they would leaving it in a pile of $450 million.
Sure, because those people that have that kind of cash, they think about this stuff, right? I mean,
yeah.
You and I don't think about it much because it is what it is. I get so much every month and, you know,
right.
I buy my One World Way and my pine pollen and I'm good, right. You know, whatever.
Decide what you're going to do without. Yeah, I know the... And, you know, for folks that don't have to do that...
A simple life. Right? I got a simple
yeah,
life.
Yeah, it is. It's a simple life. For folks who don't do those budget things, what they think about is, what's my money going to be worth 10 years from now?
Which most people don't, right? We don't. Most of us don't do that, right?
Well, I know some of the big...
You do, because you study this stuff.
And I think about it for my clients as well. But if you, there's some commercials on TV, on regular network television, one of the big brokerage houses say, we ask people how much money they think they'll need in retirement, right? Have you seen that one?
No, no.
And they're walking along this graph, and they start to fall off when they realize that they just, they're going to outlive their money. They don't have enough money. So for folks that have an abundance of money, that's, of course, what they think about. How long can I keep up like this? When will I run out of money? And protecting its purchasing power is one of the key elements of, or increasing it, as one of my friends said yesterday. As long as you have more checkers at the end than you did when you started, then you win. And, you know, so you're either adding to the pile, you're hoping for capital growth, or you're generating a return that hopefully offsets this inflation. But where do you get that today when, you know, 30-year obligations are yielding 3%?
Yeah, and of course, that whole idea of chasing returns is why people buy Venezuelan bonds at 10% or whatever, you know, whatever they buy.
Right, risky.
Yeah,
yeah.
I saw a thing where, you know, the Chinese investors, are pretty savvy people if you read some of the stuff, but they're Chinese guys are now into buying some. By the way, I'm getting a little bit of feedback back and way in the background. Is that your headsets or something like that? Not really feedback, but I can. Hey, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. Okay, these are. Remember in 2008 where they had, you know, all of the derivatives and the synthetic things actually turned this a subprime thing, which really wasn't much of anything, right?
Right.
Into a...
Right, the amplifier.
Into a bomb,
yeah.
Right?
Because
you had
right.
said years... You had said, what, 10 years? Was it 10 years now? My God.
Something like that.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. You told us 9 years ago that if you add up all of the people, whatever, the subprime thing, it wasn't that much money.
All of the defaulted mortgages.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that much, was it?
$180 billion.
And those were the mortgages that this doctor... What's his face? Barry, in the movie The Big Short, found.
Shorted,
yeah. Right. And he shorted them, right? And made a lot of money. $1.6 trillion or something like that?
Some ridiculous pile of money.
Made a lot of money. Because he went to the banks. You watch the movie. It's great. And he just did these deals. I'd like to short these mortgages. And the bank said, oh, sure, whatever. You know?
Well, I'd like to short the securities, backed by
that are,
these mortgages.
Yeah. The mortgage-backed securities, right. That's what he did. Yeah. And the banks just, okay, if the movie was accurate, the bank said, man, this guy, give him all he wants.
That's right. That's right.
He's like, get them all he wants, man.
Yeah, boy, you want to buy those?
Because these AAA mortgages, you know, they're not going to do
they're
it.
Yeah, safe is safe. Safe as can be.
So who lost money on that deal? The Michael Berrys or the banks?
Well, anybody who was short those bonds. Yeah, and it was the big banks. Deutsche Bank was the one that really took a major punch in the face in that deal.
Really? Well, is that one of the reasons then why the why we had to come up with all this money?
Oh, yes. And AIG, of course, that was the beauty of the deal. So not only do I think it's not going to happen, that the bonds are going to go bad, but if it does, I'm going to buy insurance from American International, right, AIG, the insurance company, which protects me in case it does happen. So the risk management side of the equation says that you hedge your bet. If somebody like Dr. Berry shows up with a big checkbook and says, I want to buy these way outreaching options, you have to consider, well, what would happen if he hits? Then we can't pay, so let's buy insurance.
Yeah. Wow. It's just like having too many martinis at Vegas, isn't it? It just is like that. It's so interesting. How can you have one of the biggest financial system, I mean, the biggest financial system in the world, uh-huh, with all of this weird kind of greed and fear thing running the whole show? It's just, it's like Orwellian, or I don't know what it is. No wonder you're into buying gold and silver. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, my competition is the 10-year government bond. You know, the 10-year 2.2% yielding. What the heck is that?
Yeah, so. I wanted to ask you, I know you do well and everything, but what if you had like a bunch of money, like somehow, you know, your Uncle Harry left you $1 billion or something like that. Yeah. I mean, what would you do with it? Would you just go buy my
coin? I target coins, yes,
which,
exactly.
Really?
Sure.
But there's not enough coins to spend that kind of money.
Well, then what happens?
I don't know.
To the price of coins, then? It goes up.
Oh, I see. You would be driving. Oh, really? So if George Soros or Zucker or Gates or whoever the boys are out there are what's his face in Omaha, Buffett,
Warren,
if they woke up and they said, you know, I think I got a couple billion here, I'm not doing much with. I think I'm just gonna call the Andy and say I want to buy. What would happen? And this is a strange question, but what would happen?
Okay, so one of two things. So either the dealer is going to sell him what's available without any regard to what's good for him.
Which they would do, right, pretty much, except you would.
A larger majority of them would. But to me, you know, plenty of that stuff around, I would say, Warren, what you need to do is target the issues.
Listen, Warren, let's have breakfast because I got to talk to you.
So if we target the issues that you that we know are in fixed supply, very limited supply, and let's say we set a target point, anything that has less than 100 coins graded,
woo,
and we just buy those.
Woo, for Warren.
And what would happen is what has been happening and what will continue to happen as people buy these things, as people discover them and buy them.
Yeah.
Fixed supply, increasing demand, value rises. It's just that simple. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So in the stock market, it's illegal. If I were to say, I'm going to buy XYZ stock, and I'm just going to keep buying XYZ stock until I have it all. Well, I have to file all kinds of paperwork with the SEC and say, oh,
because
I'm buying
XYZ. Because they
know
what you're doing. Yeah, they know.
So that they know what I'm doing, right. But in the coin market?
Nobody knows. It's private.
Not a crime.
It's private. It's not a crime. So it's just not.
So I've been advising our listeners, for example, the silver commems, these silver half dollars that the Mint started making back in 1892.
Did they?
And so every couple of years, every year, they would strike a coin to celebrate or commemorate a specific event, the Columbian Exposition, the 100th anniversary of the United States, the World's Fair, you know, the kinds of things, pieces of American history, but they were legal tender. They were just like the other money. And because they were so minuscule in their mintage, like, so they might, in a regular year, 1915, they might strike a million regular silver half dollars, but then they strike 25,000 of these special half dollars to commemorate the opening of the Panama Canal.
Special. They're special.
Special. They can be spent as money if you want, but if you stop and look at them for a minute, they have a special motif. Boy, aren't they special. I think so. And, you know, now 100 years later, finding one of these things and then finding one in pristine condition and then trying to buy a second one, that will reveal to you quickly what the supplies of them look like. They're just, they're not out there. And the NGC, the outfit that grades the coins and certifies them and says that they're real, they keep a population of how many they've seen and what the grade is. So as this information spreads out, and I'm sure that it will, given the means of communication these days.
Oh, when Warren wants to spend $1 billion.
Or anybody, yeah, anybody, not just Warren.
Yeah, anybody.
Anybody can go to ngccoin.com and they can say, oh, look, ooh, there's only 400 of those left after 100 years. There's only 400 of them that have been known to NGC.
You could buy, so
now
them, all.
I open
you could
my,
buy them all, right?
I open my book and I see a mintage of 25,000, but only 400 survived. Wow, what a buying opportunity. Hmm. So they're out there, and we try to find them rather than just buy what's available, you know, the stuff you see on late night TV. There was a great article in the Wall Street Journal one of our listeners sent about these contrived rarities. So people were taking modern minted coins from the mint, sending them to NGC and having them certified as what they are. Perfect. I mean, they were just made 20 minutes
perfect.
Ago. Of course, they're perfect.
These are perfect.
And then the government, being complicit in this, said to the coin dealers, it's okay to put these gold and silver coins, although they aren't, as I'm using that phrase loosely, these tokens, these round things that we make and sell for an enormous premium. I mean, the journal did a pretty good job of tearing up the mint, but essentially they add, the mint adds 25%, and then the dealer adds 25% or more, and then the poor collector buys something that he thinks is rare and ends up with nothing. I mean, just a run-of-the-mill coin that the mint struck by the millions and millions. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't do that to Warren. I wouldn't do that to my worst enemy. To me, the coins to buy are the ones that have a track record, an established distribution that cannot be altered. So no big company can go in and buy all of the 2017 coins. Well, they can, but they can't buy the 1917 coins, can they? Mm-hmm. They're already distributed. They're already out there. So that's what you look for in a rare coin investment. That's how I would steer Warren, whether it was $1 billion, $1 million, $100,000, or $10,000 that his life saved.
But if he had $1 billion, and you could eventually spend his money.
Oh, yeah.
Could you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, sure. By just continually raising.
But is there that
raising
much market cap in coins out there?
Yeah, continually raising the bid.
Patrick. Oh, because it would just keep going up. It'd be like Bitcoin.
Yeah, like everything.
Yeah, like anything. Hey, yeah, people.
Yeah, like anything. If you have a fixed supply of something.
Yeah, that's
known,
what it is, right?
Fixed. And then supply and demand.
One and that's why the classic cars or even the stupid Beanie Babies.
The Leonardo paintings.
The paintings, right?
$450 million.
I know.
So for us, we look at it and say, okay, well, the most expensive coin, I think, was $15 million.
There's one coin, $15 million?
Yeah.
What was that?
It was a private treaty deal on that 1794 silver dollar, the first silver dollar. But if you recall, we talked about the last, so that was the first silver dollar, the last $20 gold piece, remember? Mm-hmm. That they seized and sold.
Yeah, right.
But that only brought $7.5 million.
$7.5 million,
yeah. It was about a decade ago, maybe more.
Pretty interesting. I was kind of looking at the... So on this end, we have a guy like you who's looking at rarities, limited supply, using gold and silver as the only real money, according to the Constitution. Then on the other end of the deal, you have the, you know, the mortgage-backed securities and then the credit default swaps of 10 years ago. And now this has not changed. You have told us this has not changed whatsoever. These synthetic derivatives where there's bets on bets, and I bet that Andy's going to lose, and Andy takes insurance out that he's going to win. Yeah. Then I take insurance out to say, well, if Andy wins, then... And then what I'm seeing, like, with these people in... China's really catching on to these CLOs, they call them, which is pretty big here, where they take these highly leveraged corporate bonds. Why you would want a highly leveraged corporate, a company rather, that's highly leveraged, corporate bonds, they bundle these, right? And then you get to borrow money and leverage them, and then you can make maybe like 20% return. That's why these guys do this stuff, right?
Right.
That's crazy.
Well, sure, because... But and it's the same logic that applies in any market. So you could buy a share of Apple, or let's do Google, a share of Google for $1,000. Amazon, you could buy a share of Amazon for $1,000. Or you could take the $1,000 and you can borrow $10,000.
Can I get you a little closer to the mic?
You could take the you could take the $1,000 and borrow $10,000.
Not farther away, closer.
Wrong mic.
Okay. That's funny. 888-663-6386, email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Andy's just, we're just now setting up the studio there in Hilton Head where Andy is, and on SDL South. So you still got little kinks in there. He's got his little phones going and stuff like
that. Yeah, like don't bring your phone in the
studio. Don't bring your phone in the studio. You can bring your sulfur and your water and your coffee, but not your phone.
Which I forgot.
What you got? Well, you got time to go get it because we have to do a commercial, okay?
Okay.
You got time to go get it. Previously with chemist, biologist, and nutritionist George Altgeld, we asked him this. And so what do you think about Dr. Seneff's contention that as these glyphosates are in the soil, they bust the sulfur cycle and that's really detrimental to the body?
It's extremely detrimental. Sulfur is such an important detoxifying agent for the entire body and especially for the liver. You've got to have trace minerals so that the liver can build these compounds that are essential for getting itself cleaned. And that lady who was talking about sulfur, man, play that ad every chance you get because our foods are so deficient in sulfur, and it is a big deal for the liver to have enough sulfur to make all those compounds that it uses to detoxify itself. Not just sulfur, they're all important, but sulfur is the one that we're so deficient in, and we need sulfur.
Thanks, George. I had some this morning. You might want to give it a try. You can click an order right on the front page of oneradionetwork.com. 3 locations, 3 prices delivered. And if you like more than £4 for a discount, email me, Patrick, at oneradionetwork.com. Daniel Vitalis is here, and we're talking about his new product, Taboo, that really has short-term and long-term effects on the libido and the whole sexual experience.
We really wanted to redefine the category. You know, we wanted something that worked in the short term that would help increase the blood flow to erectile tissue. The penis, the vagina, the clitoris, the nipples. We wanted something that would increase blood flow to that erectile tissue, but we also wanted something that would work on the long term, helping to increase sex hormone in both men and women to give people a better quality of sex life over time as well. And we wanted to do that in a formula that tasted delicious. In other words, we wanted something that when you tasted it, you kind of wanted to take another dose. And we achieved all three of those things. It's delicious. It works tonight, and then it works over the course of time as well. So this is a really great investment in your sex life and something that you and your lover are going to really enjoy sharing together.
I think it sounds pretty good to me. If you'd like to get some of this, it's called Taboo, and it's available at any Surthrival link on oneradionetwork.com. Keep in mind now it's going to start getting chilly, Willy, where you are. We don't do chilly here a lot in the Central Texas, but we have our moments. And if you'd like to get yourself a sauna, these are so fun to have around the house, especially during the colder months. But if you live anywhere north of, Dallas, you know, you get enough cold in there to experience some kind of a winter and get your little tootsies warm. And this is so much fun because you warm up the whole body and you sweat and you get the far infrared rays and so healthy. You can have fun with doing castor oil on there. You can rub turpentine, get a sore joint or something, and ice it up and then jump in there and then jump in the shower. It's really fun and it's very easy to use. Just put it in tuck it away in a corner somewhere. There's no plumbing. It's far infrared technology from Taiwan, a medical university. It's won about five different awards. This technology, extremely low EMFs, and any EMFs that you do get, They're magnetic, that's all. They're not radio frequencies. They're not like cell phone stuff. Just magnetic, kind of the same stuff you get in a Prius or a Tesla. I'm going to get one of those someday. Oh, maybe a Tesla when I get rich and famous. More rich and famous. And then can imagine the EMFs in one of those guys. I'd like to get my meters in there. Whew. And also around your fridge or your juicer. That's a magnet. Anything with a motor has a magnetic thing. But anyway, so it's a very nice unit. It's very quiet. You got a timer on there. They have two different outputs, one on the right and the left side on the floor in the corner. So if you would like to work your way up to get it really, really hot, you can just use one. If you'd like to email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, that is the best way to purchase it. Retail price is $11.95, but I'm authorized to give you a deal, $9.95. We can also do a deal with the lamp, the table lamp, which is the same technology. You can pinpoint it on knees and shoulders when you get off the golf course or stuff like that, back pain. I can give you the lamp and the sauna for $11.95, and the lamp is a $250 standard retail price. So, or I'll just work out a deal with you, give you whatever you want, or just the lamp. Just email me is the best way, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, the Relax Far Infrared Sauna.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com. Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Okay, Andrew Goss, currency historian, and he buys and sells gold coins for a living. Andrew's company is SDL Corp. They have a whole team in Hawthorne, New Jersey, also in Hilton Head. The number to call Andrew if you'd like to talk to him about stuff is 800-468-2646. 800-468-2646. He has people that's been with this company for 10, 20, 30 years. I think your partner, Fred, is what, 30 years or so?
Yeah, I stopped counting.
You stopped counting?
Three.
Long time.
Like birthdays.
Right?
Long time.
Yeah. Donna, who I answers the phone sometimes when I call. How long has she been there? She's been.
We all answer the phone.
I know you answer the phone.
Everybody answers the phone.
Well, I can answer the phone. I'm not too big. Yeah.
No, everybody here works. Yeah, there's no one here that just takes a check and sits back and none of that. So we're vertically integrated company, employee owned company. So everybody works. Mm-hmm. You own it. You work here.
Yeah, baby. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So let's see. The bond market, you say, is what's keeping the guy's finger in the dike, right? So we have.
Correct. Well, they keep putting their finger in the dike with statements like, hey, you know, here's a leak in the dike, let me put my finger in it. Statements like, we're going to be accommodative. Don't worry. So
Jerome's out there saying yesterday, and I guess he's testifying again for Congress, but he's a slam dunk, that they don't use the term, we're going to print money, but then, you know, anything happens really dumb, we're going to take care of it. It's going to be okay. Just keep doing what you're doing, right?
That's right.
Keep eating the Cheetos, you know, we're going to crunch more.
Yeah.
Of course, it's not really talked about except places like here, of what this means for, our listeners who maybe like to retire 20 years from now.
That's right. And, you know, not outlive your money. That's of course, the goal. So how much do you think you'll need 20 years from now? You're probably not figuring enough. Because you're thinking of dollars with the same value as they have today.
And that's just not going to happen the way that...
That's a mistake.
It's just not going to happen, is it?
No, it's not. It cannot happen.
It cannot happen. You know, that's the interesting thing about it. It's not like you're just making this up because you want to sell gold coins, which is not what you do, because it cannot happen. Knowing what we know and what you've taught us over the years, Andrew, with the way this works, there's just no way it's going to change and they're going to quit monetizing debt, is there?
No.
Unless they woke up and, you know.
Go to rehab.
They go to rehab in Arizona with Harvey Weinstein and wake up and say, well, okay. No, we're just not going to do this anymore.
We're not going to issue another bond today.
No, we're just not going to borrow any
more
money.
We're going to work with the money that we have.
We're going to cut 10 million jobs. They're not going to do that, are they?
No. I mean, no, it's not politically feasible.
Just not even
and not profitable for them.
And I think that's a good word. I mean, even if Donald Trump woke up, President Trump, and listened to the show and said, you know what, this is, okay, wait a minute, listen, what are we doing here? Let's get real. I mean, he couldn't do it anyway, could he? Unless he, you know, unless he brought in the Marines
get
and
real.
Just took over the Fed, right?
I can't imagine
the
how.
Only way he could do it, right? He
can't even. We're printing $1.5 trillion in deficit and, you know, talking about doing more, like let's do more.
So 1.5 trillion every year
to the, in the hole.
In the hole, right? Just with the budget. Just with the budget. This is a
correct.
And when's the last time they really cut anything from government of any real substance?
No.
They just don't do that, right?
No, they can't do that.
You can't even do that, right?
Well, they certainly can't cut the payments on what they've already spent. And remember, that takes up 77 cents of every incoming dollar. Of any kind.
That number just boggles my mind.
I know,
it should. Whenever you say that, 77 cents of every dollar to cover your debt, your interest. Right?
Debt service. Well, not just interest, debt service.
Debt service.
You have to pay some principal. Yeah, you have to pay some principal. That's right.
Like on the Social Security thing, right?
Correct, mostly that. On net, you're borrowing more than you pay out, but still, you know, you have to make these payments. You can't say to the Social Security Trust Fund, we can't send your amortization this month. We can't send the principal that you need to send to your recipients. They're not going to want to hear it.
No, it's not going to happen.
No, I don't see that as a possibility. Now, will there be means testing on Social Security? Perhaps. Will we reach a point where they say to folks, well, you bought the insurance, Social Security insurance, just in case you didn't have enough money to retire,
but
now as we look at your stocks and your bonds and your bank account, your real estate, we can see all that you have enough, so you don't need it. And you know, that sort of means testing is just about the only thing they could do to trim that 77 cents on the dollar. Well, there is another, of course, and Mnuchin, Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin, touched on it when he talked about a 50-year bond. You know, over 60% of our national debt, about $12 trillion, is due and payable in the first term of this current president. So we could stretch that out a little bit, amortize it over a longer term instead of over a short term. For those of you out there with a five-year mortgage, you know what I'm talking about, or a seven-year mortgage. If it's amortized over that, you have to pay more principal every month. However, if you stretch it out to a 30-year mortgage, then the principal amount that you pay each month becomes very small. Same would be true with our national debt. If instead of having the bulk of it financed short-term, which we do, by moving into the 30s and even the 50s and putting the national debt on a 30-year payout, we could reduce that 77 cents and have more money to spend on other things, I suppose.
Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, and the Real World of Money. If you'd like to join the show, 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. South Korea's second biggest bank is testing a wallet, you know, for their bitcoins. Their BitHub thing is one of the biggest ones in the world. It's amazing the people outside of this country as well that are into this crypto stuff. I wonder what, I'd like to get in their heads and psyche and understand why it's so popular in Asia. I mean, China, it's just massive, man. The people.
They have a strong distrust of a centralized government.
Even more than ours? Yeah, I guess so. Oh, they probably understand the centralized government thing.
But
they've got to understand that this thing is...
And trusting them with your money.
Well, but why are they trusting a crypto thing that they have no idea? I mean, we don't really...
Maybe you haven't heard.
We don't know how this is
going to... It's going up.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was $11,000 yesterday, and then now it's $10,500 on that South Korean news. It's nuts. Where is this thing going? I know...
Jim Rickards was on a panel, and he paraphrased Joe Kennedy, because Joe Kennedy said, you know, they asked him and... How did you know to sell all your stocks right at the top of the crash in 1929?
I know what you're going to say.
Well,
yeah.
The shoeshine boy.
Shoeshine boy. He said buy stocks, right?
He said buy stocks.
And he knew it was, yeah.
Yeah. And Jim Rickards told that story at a conference last week. He said, you know, the shoeshine boy said buy cryptocurrency. An elderly lady in a small coffee shop said, should I buy Bitcoin? So, yeah. You know, yeah. The word bubble, I guess, would really be an understatement as it comes to the
I think 900% increase since the beginning of the year. I mean, that's
parabolic.
That's parabolic. I mean, there's not even a word for that. And a couple of the other ones, the Ethereum, I think there was the second one. It's huger upside than that. But where do you really think, Andrew, in your heart of hearts, this thing, what's going to happen here 2, 3, 4 years from now? I mean, if you, what do you think it's going to get, it's going to just end really ugly for these people?
Ugly, yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Because?
Well, think again, the bubbles pop because of excessive leverage, right? I mean, that's
excessive,
the bottom line.
In other words, people borrowing money to buy them?
To buy them,
and that's what's going on now?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I keep thinking about it. If you look at the Bitcoin thing and they see how many are being bought and sold by minute. I mean, it's just like, I mean, here's this. You know, you look at this one chart, they just, people are out there just buying these things. Selling them. Crazy. I mean,
now,
millions
and
of
the
dollars.
The people that are doing business that's less than savory, they use this market to transfer money. It's a lot easier than the old method of having people with briefcases carry it across borders. See?
And of course, and it's a lot easier to do than wiring money because everybody knows, right? Everybody knows, as Leonard Cohen says.
Right, they need to keep things quiet. They can't be doing it that much out in the open.
Yeah.
So that whole, if you recall that, what was it called? Silk Road case?
Yeah. And that dude's still in jail, right?
But he was a narcotics dealer. Right?
Oh, yeah.
He was a drug dealer.
I think Silk Road was, they were doing drugs on the dark web and the cocaine, all kinds of stuff, whatever you wanted, you know.
You could pay for it with this method so that it couldn't be tracked or traced.
Right.
Now, we talked about briefly this thunderclap Senate bill that says, okay, you guys can keep using those cryptocurrencies, but we're going to tell the banking system and you to treat them as cash. So that means if you have more than 10,000, you have to know your customer. You can't move it and change it, and et cetera, without, you know, some reports being filed.
So you mean they can? You're saying that they would order the Bitcoin exchange people that they've got to do these things, but
correct.
Why do they have to? I mean, who's going to do anything about it if they don't?
Well,
because it's a peer-to-peer thing without. Oh, you could arrest.
Arrest people, yeah, because, you know, the one thing that this thing needs to work is an exchange. And this idea that, I'm just going to supply the exchange, but I'm not responsible for it,
I lost you there. What do you mean? Now, as you right now, people go to
well, the think of the Craigslist thing, for example. Uh-huh. The Craigslist thing, when the entity that established Craigslist.
Right.
And then people were using it for all sorts of nefarious things.
They still do.
And they said, we don't have any control over who posts what on here.
Yeah, well, we don't know, you know.
Yeah.
If a prostitution or whatever,
right,
drugs.
Right. Drugs, we don't know. This is the same thing that the Bitcoin exchange people are trying to say. Well, you know, we just make the platform. We can't report to you who's using it.
I mean the place where you go to buy the Bitcoins.
Or sell the Bitcoin. The exchanges.
The exchanges. Coinbase and all that stuff.
You got to have a buyer and a seller. You can't, I mean, otherwise, how do you get liquidity?
Right.
How do you turn it back into
money?
There's
a lot of different exchanges, right?
Correct.
Okay.
But these are the choke points.
Okay. So you're saying.
You know, the same thing. So in 1934, in 1928, you could walk into any bullion dealer in the United States. Go to New York City and plunk your money down on the counter and walk out with bars of gold.
Right.
You could do that.
Right.
You could buy them, right? And it was free. You were free to do so. That was just another commodity you own. And people, of course, started storing those and buying those and transferring their dollars into gold bars and gold coins, etc. And then the government, thunderclap, it's illegal. to own gold bars. Boom. So now if you had a gold bar, you couldn't sell it. There was no exchange that you could sell it on. And if you did try to set up some black market back-end deal, you're subject to not only the fraud that goes with that, but also a regulatory hammer. You know, 5 years in jail, I think, was the penalty they imposed on people that tried to do private deals. Try to sell your gold to another person that wants to buy gold. So that was an example of a thunderclap, an otherwise wonderful asset, suddenly destroyed as a store of value.
Suddenly destroyed.
Through government regulation.
Yeah.
But so will they do the same thing to the cryptocurrencies? I believe they will. Yeah.
Why would they not? I mean,
As Jim Rickards put it, he said, the cryptos will never replace gold, and government intervention is a certainty once they go after the terrorists and the child pornographers that use them. So once they decide, oh, terrorists are using cryptocurrencies to transfer money to fund their operations, so same thing they did with cash, we need a war on cryptos. And once that's unleashed, goodness, I don't want to be an owner of a Bitcoin at $11,000 or even $5,000 in that environment.
Huh. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, OneRadioNetwork.com. But today, if some guy is on CNBC and said, you know, I made $4 million this year. I mean, I'm doing well with Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has to pay taxes on that, correct?
No one reporting him.
I mean, he would have to pay taxes when he sells them at a profit. If they're just in there, their notional value is higher. He hasn't earned any income yet, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so then when he does sell, he would have to pay tax on for just like if he bought and sold stock. Is that right?
But first, well, no.
Is that right?
First, he would have to report. That is correct in terms of the percentage that he would have to pay, yes.
Yeah, so it would be like a short or long-term investment, and he'd have to pay taxes legally.
Correct.
Because if you buy and sell anything and make a profit in this country, you have to pay tax.
You pay an income tax.
Income tax,
correct.
Right. You buy and sell your car. And it's more
your couch
or whatever.
Your Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, I bought them for $1 million. I sold it for $12 million. You have $11, $11 million in tax, whatever your
That's
tax.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
But so obviously the IRS is not happy with this whole crypto thing phenomenon.
You know it.
I mean, but could they not say they see this guy on CNBC and they say, well, let's go visit George. And let's,
yeah.
You know, okay.
Oh my goodness.
So they say, George, you know, we're just going to put you on notice. When you sell these, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. So he'd have to. But could they get that information if George says, nah, I'm not paying? I mean, you wouldn't want to do that.
There's no trace data.
Yeah.
There's no
trace data.
Oh, sure,
there's trace data. I mean, everything somewhere, somehow is actually even more so, isn't it, Andrew?
Well, nothing
with the blockchain.
Nothing that they couldn't, that they could reach to in, so trace data in the bond market, for example.
Yeah. You buy and sell bonds or you buy and sell stock.
They know exactly how many were traded, you know, what their grade was, and they can dig a little deeper and find out who the buyers are, who the sellers are, what they're buying.
Couldn't you do that with cryptos too, though?
The SEC, no. You'd have to get a warrant and, you know, go after the exchanges. Whereas in the bond market, that data is just published, it's sent to the Fed automatically. And in the case of everyone who's done investing knows, 1099s, if you're an American company, you own an American corporation, and you pay someone, an individual, some money, mm-hmm. you must issue them a 1099.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, couldn't they do, say I was on exchange XYZ, I bought and sold Bitcoins over to 2017. At the end of that year, I had $20,000 profit, the exchange issues you a 1099 and you pay the tax on it.
Correct. Yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah, they could do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And could they order the exchange to do the 1099?
Yes. Well, yes. Mm-hmm.
I guess they could.
With international cooperation, they certainly could.
So you're saying the dollar boys and girls, well, that's fine, though. I would suspect that most people out there realize that they're going to have to pay tax on this thing
somewhere
along the line.
Missing... Maybe what you're missing this thing.
What am I missing? What am I missing?
That the bulk of the transactions in Bitcoin until very recently were people that didn't want anyone to know what they were doing.
Probably at the beginning. But now, I mean, people, there can't be millions and millions of people think they're just going to get out of taxes. I mean, are they that naive? Because they're not. At the end of the day, they won't, you know.
Well, I mean, right? That's what people told them, though. That's what they told them. There's no reporting. There's no central authority. There's no 1099s. When you buy and sell these things, there's nothing.
Right. Well, there's nothing like that with gold and silver coins either.
Well, but for us, it's a physical cash in hand, coin in hand business.
Right.
So, you know, there are limits to what we do. And each of these things, as it relates to money, things that we call money, the fixed supply nature of them is one of the key elements. You know, if you don't have a fixed supply, if you have an unlimited supply, then how can it be money? There's just too doggone many of them for anybody to respect them. So this is what's attractive about Bitcoin.
Because they say there's only going to be 21 million. Right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. 21 million. That's it. There'll be no more.
Well, I mean, if they would hold to that, if you believe that, Bitcoin could go to $1 million.
Right. So in the case of gold and silver coins struck in 1915, it's easy to believe that there will be no more of them made.
Yeah, because you can't.
We're not in 1915. We've long since lost the dies, etc. So could we make a replica, a duplicate? Sure you can, but you'll always be able to tell the real deal from the duplicate, the replica. So, I mean, this is the case. So you know you have a fixed supply. With Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, this is people telling you that there's only going to be 21 million. That's all. The honor of men. That's what we're relying on.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the integrity of computer data. You know, in God we trust, all others bring data. So you have to have, bring your blockchain so we can see that you have something. With a gold coin, if you have it, you have it in your hand, in your pocket, that's it, or in your safe. There's no way that anyone can deprive you of that value unless they whack you on the head and take it from you.
Well, you've just seen so much stuff over the years, I suspect,
yep.
and know so much about yep. solid money, real money.
Yeah, real
that,
money.
That for you, when they call Bitcoin the digital gold, you must cringe.
Oh, well, I did. I mean, you did. I was there at the beginning. Are you kidding me? It's like,
I mean, every time I hear somebody say that, I think of you. Yeah. I go, Andy's probably not. No.
It's a replica. It's a representation of that. It looks kind of like it might be that. All the Bitcoins are actually depicted to look like coins, gold coins, but they're not. They're not backed by anything. They're not based on anything. The only thing that gives them value is their fixed supply. And God help you, or a Bitcoin investor, if all of a sudden that supply doubles or triples or quadruples, you know, then the only thing that that gave it value is gone. Now it's all about demand. And so now if there's any regulatory effort to take away the privacy that comes with these things, well, now you're done for.
Well, the game would be over if they all of a sudden start extending the number. I mean, that's the only thing. I guess that's what's going on for them.
But the banks and the central banks of the world, primarily, especially, love the technology, the blockchain technology. Love it. And will they hijack it and use it for the dollar? Yeah, absolutely. And the yen and the euro and. And certainly it brought us, the cryptocurrencies brought us a more efficient method of tracking and transferring what we already have as a fiat dollar, right? No substance, no backing. But for me, taking your money out of dollar ink and moving it into Bitcoin is like jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Yeah, they're the same kind of fiat unbacked. Yeah. Money.
Well, so you know,
for the central banks, it's natural to just take the technology.
There's a lot of philosophical kind of big picture thing going on with Bitcoin too, as well. Mm-hmm. Here is mm-hmm. the CEO of Bitcoin Cash saying we won't need banks anymore, saying that Bitcoin is an extinction level event for banks and probably governments too. Yeah, I mean, good luck with that. I mean, think about it. This is what the way these people are thinking, though, that the
they
governments. you know, who control everything, yeah, along with dollar people and the banks. They're going to sit back and sit back and watch their whole thing
collapse
just because. I don't think so. I mean, I'm pretty naive, but I'm not that naive. That's what I'm saying. Right.
That's my sense right there, that they're not going to sit back. You know, like,
why would they?
I use the burglar analogy. You know, the burglar breaks in, you come home, catch a burglar, you say, you wait right there, I'm going to call the police.
Right.
Okay, I'll wait right here. The burglar is naturally going to take steps to protect himself. And I believe the Federal Reserve banks and the other central banks of the world will do the same thing. And they can apply regulatory pressure. Like, they could say to Congress, you need to pass a law. You need to deal with this. And then Congress will. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think Grassley's Senate bill was all about.
Well, I guess there is a possibility that the 21 million stays there. They get together with governments and they have transparency and everybody pays taxes and it just keeps going up. I guess that's possible, and people store their money there if they want.
Yep.
You know, I guess that might happen.
That might happen. You know? Right.
And I guess in a perfect world you'd probably be more fun to have it in Bitcoin. And if you go to Australia and you just want to move your money, you just do a couple clicks and you're there. Otherwise, you know, the banks. You know, Andrew, I needed to wire some money, a very small amount, but I needed to wire it for whatever. I won't get into it in the last couple of days, right? I go on the banking. I got a bank account at Wells Fargo, and I couldn't even do the wire unless I had a cell phone to get a text to prove that I was Patrick.
Right.
Right. So I don't have a cell phone. I don't have one that works in the house. I got one in the car that'll work in an emergency. So I couldn't do it. So then I go to I went to the Wells Fargo in Dripping Springs yesterday. Said, I got to do this little wire here. And you can do it. I can't do it. We need a bank dude. I don't know, an officer. I said, what? You can't do it? The lady at the window? No, I can't do it. So I had to wait for an officer. So she comes and she says, okay. So, and she starts asking me questions. Oh, well, let me see your driver's license. Well, I didn't have it because I was scanning it for something else that I needed. It was in my printer. So I said, no, I don't have that. She said, no, we can't do that. So it was like banks treat, I really felt weird. It's almost like banks are treating their product as something evil. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like they got this weird energy around your money and what you can do with it. And they're all doing it for your safety, and it's not for your safety.
Well, as you recall what I've said about that in the past, the easiest way to deal with that mentally is to stop thinking of it as your money.
Yeah.
Can
I have your permission to wire $148?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, whatever.
Do you mind if I... Right.
That's what it's like.
That is what it's like. And now, you know, the banks have...
So you see why people want to get out of banks, because they're weird.
Sure they do.
They're bonkers.
But you must have an intermediary, and the naivete of the Bitcoin man who thinks that you don't need a central bank. You don't need a central bank when you have a fiat currency. Really? Okay. Then you obviously haven't studied monetary history at all. You cannot let the free market dictate the value of something that has no substance, because they'll rule it to be worth what it is, nothing. You absolutely must lean against the wind to maintain a current value.
But that would be only if you have a unlimited number like the dollar, and in theory, Bitcoin is still a solid number, and that makes it, it's a different commodity.
Oh, sure. No, absolutely.
It's a different commodity.
Until we can trade options and futures.
Well, you can do it now. I was reading a couple articles. See, this is something that could be interesting. There's coming up with all kinds of ways to short Bitcoin.
Right.
Now you're talking.
Or exchange traded.
Now you're talking here. There's a way till that sucker gets to 20,000 and short it, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Boy, it's just bonkers, man. It's really pretty.
Well, it is. But just another example of how bubbles can develop. And to me, it's so obvious. The bond market's in a bubble. The stock market's in a bubble. Yeah, most of the transactions in the stock market are institutions.
Sure.
They're not individuals. So these are companies buying back their own stocks and institutions like hedge funds and mutual funds and bond funds.
The people that are buying, taking the S&P or the Dow to whatever.
Right. There's just no end user. There's just no end user. Now, for equities, I'm a little more comfortable to put your money in a stock, in the equity of a company, as opposed to the bonds. I'm baffled.
But see, people need some place to put their money. I mean, where are they going to put it, you know?
Well, they're putting it in Leonardo da Vinci paintings, gold and silver coins, art, antiques, jewelry, you know, everything physical that you can get your hands on.
48 Chevy, man, buy one of those.
Sure. Experiencing record prices just about across the board. And that's simply a matter of, you know, more dollars chasing around the same fixed supply of things. You could throw any other thing into the mix. As long as you have the supply and demand equation, I guess you're in the driver's seat.
Society Gen, we always trust them.
Société Générale.
They did a little thing here, which is kind of curious. If you look at the S&P, nobody really talks about that much. I don't know why everybody talks about the Dow, but what's the difference, the S&P, the Standard
Well, the Standard, Poor's. Yeah, that's the Standard & Poor's 500 largest corporations.
Contributors to the S&P account for 35% of its value. That's kind of weird. And if you look at the guys that have gone up since Mr. Trump was elected, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Facebook, Boeing, Walmart, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Bank of America, and Nvidia. I mean, huge gains. You know, 50% and more. So Nvidia, 200%. But then if you look at your price-earnings ratio, which is kind of curious, right? Which is what's that tell us? That tells us how much they earn and how much they owe and what their stock price is and what their debt.
I'm sorry, which one?
Price-earnings
ratio, the price of the stock divided by its earnings.
Okay.
So
that is really going up a lot. So these guys are not... You know, like you're saying, there's people buying these stocks not for any reason like they're doing really well. They're just buying these stocks because they're Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, and Alphabet. And
that's it.
I mean, you know, the P.E. ratio is huge. Now, what's also interesting, if you look at their corporate tax rate on these top 10, these guys are already doing pretty darn well, and they're already in the range that if a president gets his tax cut, they're not going to do much better.
Right.
Yeah. So this tax cut is already baked into the cake in a lot of these stock prices, I guess.
Well, for the stock, which wouldn't be the only recipient of value if the president gets his tax cut, it would be the rank and file American worker who's who he said that he would be taking care of. So, you know, the fact that there'll be more jobs than there are people to fill them, that will be what, and in the supply-demand equation, that means higher wages. So.
And his conjecture is that with lower corporate tax rate of 20%, then that's going to happen.
That's right.
And he'll probably increase, correct, right?
Yes, he is probably
and corporations correct. Will do more stuff, right?
Right. Hire more people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Let's do another make spaghetti sauce or whatever we're doing.
Yeah, whatever you're making.
Yeah. If we're paying
making
35
those coolers million. There, those igloo coolers down there in Texas or those steel chainsaws in the middle of the country
more,
there.
Make more, huh?
Make more of them. Yeah, sell them for less.
Uh-huh. So what's your latest on this alleged tax cut? President said it's the biggest one in history. Of course.
Well, they voted to send it into committee now, out of committee to the General Senate. But yeah, I still have no hope for them. You got like, 10 legislative days left between now and the end of the year.
Yeah, it looks like I read an article. It looks like McCain is going to be the tripping point again. Jeez.
Always is.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So they're that tight on the votes that they're going to need John McCain to say yes on this tax thing.
Yeah, of course.
So have you looked at any of it, Andrew? Is it really going to be as the liberal people are saying, the middle income folks like me and most of our listeners, that we're going to actually have higher taxes? Is that just fake news?
It is not fake news if you live in New York or if you live in a million-dollar house.
You think they're going to snatch the property tax deductions?
That's right. Uh-huh. Yeah, they're going to limit that.
Oh, so there's going to be a cap on that?
Yes. as there may be a cap on the amount of interest that you can deduct. So up to $500,000.
So that's not hurting guys like me who's got that kind of a portfolio.
No, that's hurting people in New York City, in New Jersey, in Connecticut, and you know the surrounding suburbs. That's hurting people in Northern Virginia, Maryland, right? So we have high income. So the five fastest growing counties for income surround Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
So every one of those people, you know, live in expensive houses for sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So,
but it is a tax cut for everyone. This is the thing that the liberal media has their hair on fire.
Well,
right?
Because all the rich guys are going to get it. They're going to get an actual tax break.
They're going to pay less. But they're going to pay less, Patrick. We want them to pay more. We don't want them to pay less.
It's really weird philosophy, isn't it? They should pay more because they're rich.
Because they made more. Because they have more. So they should pay more. So this tax cut is across the board.
Uh-huh.
Everyone pays less, which will, of course, mean you either got to cut spending or hope that the increase in revenue makes up for the shortfall. Because, I mean, that's the legitimate point, that you're going to balloon the deficit if you do this.
Well, the CBD, what are they, CBO or whatever they're?
Congressional Budget Office.
They say $10 trillion over 10 years, right?
That's a trillion a year
more
added to the deficit.
Which would be 2.5.
Could be 2 trillion.
Well, that'd be 2.5 times 10.
Well, if you...
That's another 25 trillion on the money supply. No, that's not possible, is it?
No, it's not, huh? Okay. I would put nothing past them. So it certainly would be a way to solve their problem.
That'd be doubling the money supply.
Indeed.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now you see why I like gold and silver coins, and art, and antiques, uh-huh. You know, things that are in fixed supply.
Okay,
Andrew, dollars sure aren't in fixed supply.
No, I don't think so. But I could buy euro. That wouldn't work. How
not
about yuan?
Not fixed supply.
No, that
not
work.
Fixed supply.
You're no fun at all. You don't know what to do here. Further proof from the recent Wall Street Journal story. Writes Bill from Colorado, attached below, that using U.S. Mint gold and silver proofs are not a good investment with your IRA. The premiums charged by the mint and coin brokers in many cases above 200% negate the short-term benefits of this supposedly safe retirement savings method. Please have Andy opine for me and your listeners. Okay.
Yeah, I think we started the show with that.
Kind of, sort of, we did.
That was the article.
U.S. gold and silver coin turned into something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the mint, seeing the demand in the rare coin market, says, let's make some rare coins. After all, we're the mint.
We are the mint.
So they do. They start striking contrived rarities. Like, this coin is in perfect condition. It's a proof. Now, in the old days, they would make a few proofs, which are special coins on polished dies with polished planchet handled separately and the state of the art in what they're minting. And then after they made 10 or 20 or 30 proofs, then they just let the machine run regular mint business strike coins. So these specially prepared coins in the vintage coin market are, wow, they're like the caviar and truffles. So then the mint says, well, let's make some new proofs. And so that's what they did. In many cases, their proof mintage is bigger than the business strike because there is no business. So they make nothing but proofs. And then Congress sneakily passes a law and says, oh, well, these things are numismatic. And they can go into your IRA, but only them. You can't put any of the classic ones in your IRA, but these new ones that the mint is making, you can put in your IRA.
Those rascals.
I know.
They're rascals.
And so then Americans bought them and paid this enormous premium.
Like 25% above this article says, right?
Yeah, well, as Bill pointed out, and many dealers had no... I think one guy quoted in the article said, we buy high and sell higher. Okay. Wow. Oh, what a good philosophy for your end user investor. But, I mean, that's what went on. And so then now these poor guys, this is started in 86. And, you know, we've talked about it many times at length on the show, and I've advised people against it. because it's a contrived market. These things aren't really rare. They made them rare. They by edict, said, well, these are rare. We declare these to be rare coins. These are rare. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. There's no market acceptance. So at any rate, mint sold high, dealers sold higher, and thousands, all the commercials I ever heard on the radio talking about, put gold coins in your IRA.
Yeah.
And these
you
were
hear
the
it
things
all the time.
That,
yeah.
Yeah. These were the things that they put in your IRA. And then how much are they per ounce? Oh, way more than they should be. And unfortunately, it's hard to recover from that. So I don't advise the purchase of newly minted contrived rarities unless it's for just a fraction over their gold content or silver content, as we do with the modern dollars and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for the average investor, if you're thinking about putting gold coins in your IRA, beware. Just know what you're buying and know the market acceptance. And thank you, Bill. I would urge listeners who are thinking of doing this to read that article, because it really is eye-opening for sure.
Well, I was going to buy a 2015 Nicole Kidman commemorative. I don't know. It was, they said it was very rare, so I don't know.
Or the 2015 American Eagle in proof 70 condition. Okay. You know, it's a two-year-old coin. It's perfect, but I don't think it's a good investment.
Yeah, just boy, in this day and age when this whole idea of, quote, money, unquote, is getting so scattered all over, you know, with cryptos, and who knows what's going to be next. You know, there'll be something else.
Right. We're heading towards a cashless society, for sure.
And so it's going to be really imperative for people to keep up with this and understand what's really going on, so they, you know, so they don't end up in you know, their kid's basement. That's terrible, but you know, they don't want to do that. They want to.
That's why I advocate stacking. You know, you stack up a couple of gold coins every now and then. You just make yourself a pile of a fixed supply, high demand commodity like gold and silver coins. Even if you don't get the very numismatic coins, the very collectible coins,
just
like
get
we were
something
talking.
Of real value, huh?
Something made of silver or gold, and sock it away. You'll be better off than if you don't.
Well, I mean, it's a good argument, and I can understand why you're in the business you are, because you look at this stuff every day, and there's hardly a way to look, you know, to look back and say no, it's not going to be right. You know, I don't see a lot of downside. I just don't. But then why would gold and silver continue to move? Not a lot in their core value, which is on, we know that's controlled, right? Like 1285.
Yeah, they focus a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of energy focused on controlling that market.
Controlling the spot prices, what's called the spot
Correct.
Prices.
That's been every man's inflation indicator, you know, since the
forever.
Late 70s.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah, well, forever.
Yeah.
But.
So when the whole Lehman thing happened, what happened? I don't recall what happened to the price of gold. When that whole, you know, 3 or 4 months when it was just falling apart.
Right.
Did gold go up a lot? The spot price?
Yeah, people started pouring their money into gold. In fact, by 2011, the spot price in gold hit $1,900, and the spot price of silver was $45.46. So, you know, that represented the extreme end of the spectrum for the time that it was. And to me, it was unnatural. You know, I would have been satisfied with 1250, 1300 gold from sub 1000, right? Mm-hmm. And remember, it had been a run from 350 to 1000, 280 actually to 1000. And then another 250, 300 would have made sense. But because everyone and their brother decided it then that, oh, I should probably buy some gold. And they went out to buy, and in the process, supply and demand drove the spot price up to $1,900 in gold and $45 in silver. Mm-hmm. The time to buy, my friends. Dude, don't be one of those people. You know, the time to buy is when the markets are relatively calm, as we are now. But as, you know, we enter December, the pressures are building to such an extreme that I really fear when this... when these cracks start to appear, it could be very, very ugly this time. I mean, we'll look back at 2008 to 2011 and think, wow, what a picnic.
Yeah.
Was.
You know, it's very interesting. And when you have people like